former FBI Director James Comey after President Trump told them to hurry up. We'll hear the facts from Carrie Johnson and response from Senator Tim Kaine on Morning Edition from NPR News. Amazon will pay $2.5 billion to end the government's case that it tricked people into its Prime service. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez. What were witnesses saying before Amazon cut the trial short? Also, Sarah McLachlan remembers the start of her hit all-women music festival, Lilith Fair. It's Friday, September 26th. On this day in 1983, a Soviet military officer saw an alert that the U.S. had fired missiles at the Soviet Union. He correctly thought it was a false alarm and avoided nuclear war. News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. A federal grand jury in Virginia has indicted former FBI Director James Comey on two criminal counts. These are linked to his congressional testimony 5 years ago about the FBI investigation into Russian election interference. The criminal charges come after President Trump publicly demanded that the Justice Department move against Comey quickly. Comey says he is innocent, and he released a statement online.
My family and I have known for years that there are costs to standing up to Donald Trump, but we couldn't imagine ourselves living any other way. We will not live on our knees, and you shouldn't either.
Comey's son-in-law, Troy Edwards, is a prosecutor in the office that filed the charges against Comey. Edwards has resigned. Comey's daughter, Maureen Comey, also a federal prosecutor, is suing after the Justice Department fired her. President Trump has signed an executive action that he says will create a federal response to domestic terrorism and political violence. Trump says federal agencies will examine what he insists are the funders of groups that are considered threats. NPR's Deepa Shivaram has more.
Trump says the Justice Department, DHS, and Treasury would be involved in the response to domestic terrorism and political violence through a joint terrorism task force at the FBI. He accused people who he said were rich members of the radical left of providing funding to protesters.
These are anarchists and agitators, professional anarchists and agitators, and they get hired by wealthy people.
The comments came a day after a fatal shooting at an ICE building in Dallas and the killing earlier this month of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, the White House.
President Trump specifically mentioned two high-profile billionaires who have long supported liberal causes. But Trump provided no evidence of what he says are their ties to extremism. A group of former Treasury secretaries, central bankers, and high-profile economists is backing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. They're urging the Supreme Court not to let President Trump fire her. NPR Scott Horsley reports the group has filed a friend of the court brief.
The petition was signed by both Republicans and Democrats, including Ben Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, Hank Paulson, and Jack Lew, among others. They argue that allowing President Trump to fire Lisa Cook would erode public confidence in the Federal Reserve's independence and jeopardize the Fed's credibility to keep a lid on inflation. Trump sought to fire Cook after a political ally accused the Fed governor of making false statements on a mortgage application. Cook has denied any wrongdoing, and so far her dismissal has been blocked by the federal courts. The Supreme Court has allowed Trump to fire leaders of other independent agencies, but hinted the Fed could be a special case. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. There are only a few days left until the federal government could shut down. Congress has to agree on a spending bill, and Republicans and Democrats cannot come to terms on one. President Trump is threatening to fire some federal workers affected by the shutdown if Democrats do not agree to a spending bill. Hurricane Helene hit Florida a year ago today. The Category 4 storm swept up through the southern Appalachians. It left substantial damage in North Carolina. The National Hurricane Center says Helene is responsible for as many as 250 deaths. That makes it the deadliest U.S. hurricane since Katrina in 2005. It's a big week for rock and roll on the Billboard Albums chart. NPR Stephen Thompson reports a familiar band is debuting at number one.
If you were listening to pop and rock radio a decade ago, chances are you're very familiar with this song. When the mama said, That is Stressed Out by 21 Pilots, one of three songs by the band to reach the top five in 2015 and 2016. This week, the group is back on top of the charts. Its album Breach debuts at number one, while the song City Walls cracks the Hot 100 singles chart. Still, the album has yet to produce a major pop hit. Its chart success is due primarily to a huge flood of record sales, including 72,000 copies sold on vinyl. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
I'm Heidi Holton. We're excited at KEXC to be bringing you more jazz programming with our volunteer, Paul Kivi, the history of jazz.
Well, I think this is some of the finest music ever made, and it's kind of gotten lost across time. I pick the songs that I love, and there's lots of them, and there's lots to love. The popular music in the late 20s and 30s, especially the 30s and 40s with the big band era, that was jazz. That was the one period of time when jazz was popular music. And so you're going to hear a lot of things that are easy to get into. If you develop a taste for it, then the stuff that happens starting with Charlie Parker in the late 1940s makes sense.
Hear the history of jazz on KAXC with Paul Kivi, Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 4.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez in Culver City, California.
And I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C. Good morning. The Justice Department obeyed the wishes of President Trump and had a former FBI director indicted.
A prosecutor chosen for the job obtained the indictment from a grand jury in Virginia. The president changed U.S. attorneys and publicly demanded the prosecution of people he disliked. The resulting indictment charges James Comey with obstructing justice and making a false statement to the Senate. In a moment, we'll hear from a senator. Does he think he was lied to? First, we have the facts.
NPR's Carrie Johnson is covering this story. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning.
What is the nature of the charges?
This is a very bare-bones indictment, not even two full pages long. It seems to relate to testimony Jim Comey gave to the Senate Judiciary Committee in September 2020. He was talking about the FBI probe of Russian interference in the election and about a media leak. Comey testified he had not authorized a leak from the Bureau. The indictment says he did, and the statute of limitations on these charges was set to run out in a matter of days. So the DOJ was racing against the clock here. Comey responded on Instagram.
My heart is broken for the Department of Justice, but I have great confidence in the federal judicial system, and I'm innocent. So let's have a trial.
Well, when he says his heart is broken, I understand it to mean the Justice Department is operating explicitly at the president's direction against his political opponents. What has the president actually been saying?
Well, just yesterday afternoon in the Oval Office, President Trump called Comey a bad man and a sick man. And after the indictment, Trump posted, quote, "Justice in America." And he said Comey's at the beginning of being held responsible for his crimes. But this is a very unusual case. Let me share a bit about the timeline. Just last week, the White House forced out a career prosecutor who had been leading the U.S. Attorney's Office in Virginia. After that, prosecutor raised doubts about the strength of this case against Comey. And the president installed Lindsay Halligan, an insurance lawyer with no experience as a prosecutor, to lead the whole office. I'm hearing many career prosecutors in Virginia are contemplating quitting over this indictment and how it all went down.
Now, I should acknowledge here, Comey enraged a lot of people over the years in both parties. He enraged Republicans over the Russia investigation. But how strong is the actual case against him here?
Well, Comey is not only the former FBI director, he also served as the second in command at the Justice Department under President George W. Bush. He was a line prosecutor in the same office in Virginia that's just indicted him. He is a good lawyer, and to make these charges stick, the Justice Department is going to need to prove that Comey knowingly lied about something that was material or important, and that is a high bar. Given all the things President Trump's been saying about Comey, Comey might actually be able to make an argument about vindictive or selective prosecution. And it's also worth noting, this year the DOJ fired Comey's daughter, Maureen. She'd been a top federal prosecutor in New York. She's now sued over her dismissal, arguing it was because of her father.
Well, how does this indictment fit with everything else the president has done at the Justice Department?
President Trump has granted clemency to the Capitol rioters. DOJ has fired prosecutors who investigated Trump and other prosecutors who say they simply refuse to lie about things like deportations of migrants. But this Comey case is a major escalation. This is someone the president has targeted for years. And the feeling among DOJ veterans is, where does this end? Trump's also called for criminal charges against New York Attorney General Tish James, California Senator Adam Schiff, both prominent critics. And the president has been vowing to crack down on domestic terror and organized political violence, mentioning only yesterday George Soros and his foundation. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat from Virginia, says Trump's openly and nakedly trying to weaponize the justice system, and that might make us all less safe.
NPR's Carrie Johnson, thanks for the insights. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
James Comey is accused of lying to the Senate. So we called a senator, Democrat Tim Kaine of Virginia. Senator, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Steve. Thanks.
Do you think James Comey lied to you?
No, I don't. And your reporter talked about how this two-page indictment is super thin on details. They're trying to indict Jim Comey for something he said 5 years ago about something he did 4 years before that. So Donald Trump is looking back 9 years to go after an enemy instead of doing what he promised, bringing down inflation, ending wars, bringing down health care costs. He's focused on going after his perceived political enemies instead of serving the American public. This is a very, very serious misstep, and I think it's going to blow up in the Trump administration's face.
You are correct that the indictment gives no evidence, which I find unusual. I read a number of indictments as a reporter. Some of them are very long, have dramatic narratives. This just has no evidence. It says that he lied, so we have to guess about this. But there is a public record here. Comey said before the Senate, "I did not authorize a leak to the media." There is this other testimony from his former deputy, Brian McCabe, who did testify to leaking information and said he disclosed it to Comey afterward, I believe. Does that raise questions in your mind about what Comey did say?
Not really, Steve, because as Kerry, your reporter, said, you've got to show that there was an affirmative intent to mislead that was material and significant. Why is this material and significant? Let's just start there. That information was disclosed to the media. I mean, disclosing information to the media is sort of like, I think there's a First Amendment. The media is important in this country. So why would that be so material and significant as to constitute a crime under any circumstance? This is chasing after, Donald Trump's chasing after his own tail on this. People aren't concerned about whether things were leaked to the media 9 years ago. They're worried about prices going up and their health care going up and chaos in the economy. And so that's why this thing is so odd. And the point you made about the indictment being so short, Pam Bondi put out a press statement that was highly unusual when this indictment was announced. And the last line in the press statement was, "We will follow the facts in this case." You follow the facts before you indict somebody. You understand the facts before you indict them. You don't indict them on a two-page lack of details and then say you're going to follow the facts. This is a political hatchet job. I think the concerns about selective prosecution are significant. Mm-hmm. I think Lindsey Halligan, she's not a prosecutor. She's never had any experience in Virginia. I think even the circumstances of her appointment raise legal questions.
I'm glad you mentioned Pam Bondi and Lindsey Halligan. Lindsey Halligan being the lawyer who was put in the prosecutor's position in order to obtain this indictment. She issued a statement and said, she's saying she's on your side. The balance of power, she writes, is a bedrock principle of our democracy, she says in this statement. She said Congress needs a forthright presentation of facts, and any effort to evade or obstruct that is illegal. Just in a couple of seconds, do you agree it's important for government officials to be truthful before Congress?
Yes, and I also think it's important for an executive to respect Congress. For example, why not meet with congressional leaders to talk about the budget rather than refusing to meet with congressional leaders
We're going to get to that in a moment, but I want to stick on this matter of evading or obstructing the truth before Congress. Attorney General Bondi herself has testified before the Senate. She testified at a confirmation hearing earlier this year, and she said under oath that she would make independent and non-political decisions. Let's listen to part of the exchange with Senator Amy Klobuchar here.
So you will provide an assurance to every member of this committee that the Justice Department will only follow the facts and the law, and the White House will play no role in cases investigated or brought?
Senator, it will be my job, if confirmed as Attorney General, to make those decisions. Politics will not play a part.
She said she will make the decisions and politics will make a part. She said that to the United States Senate. In light of recent events, Senator, was that a truthful statement?
I feel misled by that, and I knew at the time she was not being sincere. I think everyone knew that. And the Donald Trump tweet at her, which he apparently meant for her only but put it out to his millions of followers last week, telling her she had to go after Comey and Letitia James and Adam Schiff, she's clearly responding, and they're responding by pushing out this career prosecutor that Donald Trump's DOJ appointed into the job, to put in Lindsey Halligan to do the president's dirty work.
One other perspective on this I want to bring in. Peter Navarro, a longtime advisor to President Trump, was on this program earlier this week, and he said it was important to investigate Comey along with top former intelligence officials and FBI agents, and he wanted it done before the 2026 election. Here's why.
And that's the problem here, because if the Democrats regain the House in 2026... can you guarantee me right now that they won't subpoena me and everybody else in the White House and do the same crap again? I'll make the prediction. Of course they will, because they think they can do whatever they want until they're held accountable.
Senator, is Navarro right? If you regain the majority in Congress, you will be issuing subpoenas and investigating them.
I have no plan to do that, but I'll say this. What Navarro just said shows this is a political prosecution. If he's talking about a prosecution of Comey and it has to be before the midterms, he's admitting that the whole thing is political to begin with. And that's why this case is, I think, in grave danger of being thrown out before it even gets rolling.
And now let me ask, as I said that I would, about the looming government shutdown. You've demanded renewal of Obamacare subsidies. There's this deadline coming up. I get that. Republicans have said, let's just do a clean bill, a temporary extension, keep the government open while we negotiate. And normally it is Democrats who say, let's do the clean bill, don't make these crazy demands. Why change now?
Well, I'll correct you. We haven't demanded renewal. We put forward an alternative. Donald Trump told the Republicans to do a budget and not deal with the Democrats, and that's what they did. We put forward an alternative that we put on the table on the 19th of September, and we've asked for a chance to meet with the president. That's the way we've done every budget deal in the 13 years I've been in the Senate. We sit down and meet, and we work out a deal. The president said he would meet with congressional leadership, then he canceled the meeting. Apparently, he would rather shut down than negotiate. Negotiation is how this government works.
Got about 10 seconds. Trump says he'll fire people if the government shuts down. Are you prepared to tell him, go ahead, do it?
He's already doing it, and we're suing him in court to block the firings as much as we can, and that's what we'll keep doing.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
You bet, Steve. Thanks.
This is NPR News.
It is 6:19. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr. Support comes from Great Lakes Aquarium with its new exhibit, Lava to Lakes, offering a discovery into what was here before the land we call Minnesota, including sharks, jellyfish, and giant prehistoric fish. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org. Weather today, another beautiful day. Sunny temperatures in the upper 60s to mid-70s, southeast winds 5 to 10, gusting higher. Lows tonight 50 to 55, and tomorrow sunny, highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. A bit warmer on Sunday with highs in the mid-70s. You can learn about chronic wasting disease with the Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers on Thursday, October 2nd from 5 to 8 at Cuyuna Brewing Company in Crosby. Find out how to prepare your deer for testing and share hunting stories and wild game recipes with other hunters. And the Rife Gallery in Grand Rapids has a reception for the exhibit End Plein Air, a group show from local outdoor painters on Friday, October 3rd from 4 to 5:30. That is part of the First Friday Art Walk. Find more at grandrapidsarts.org. United Way of Bemidji is collecting coats and other winter gear now until October 7th at Dress Club Cleaners and both Lucan's Village Foods locations. Items may be new or gently used. Distribution will take place Saturday, October 11th from 9 to noon at First Lutheran Church in Bemidji.
PR comes from the station. And from Viking, dedicated to creating travel experiences for the thinking person, with programs designed for cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Learn more at viking.com. From the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity, regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org. From Arm, committed to delivering innovative, advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm. Arm.com. And from the sustaining members of this NPR station.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Music festivals are often filled with dudes, dudes, and more dudes. In the late 90s, a group of organizers tried something different, put women first. Industry insiders said, not a chance this will work. But Lilith Fair was a smash. People flocked to see musicians like the Indigo Girls, Sheryl Crow, Erykah Badu, and the main driver of the festival, Sarah McLachlan. There's a documentary on Hulu right now looking back on what they achieved. It's called Lilith Fair, Building a Mystery. We'll hear from director Ali Pankhiu in a bit. But first, Sarah McLachlan told me what the atmosphere was like in the music industry at the time.
It was still very male-dominated. There was an attitude that you could not play women back-to-back on the radio, and you certainly couldn't have them play together on tour. Like, I would
that
go into radio
wild.
Stations all the time, and they'd say, oh, well, we love your song, but we really can't add it this week because we added Tracy Chapman, or because we added Jewel, or we added Sinead O'Connor. And I'm like, well, that's extremely frustrating to bang up against that all the time.
So Lilith Fair comes to be... And you start with just a few shows, and people are kind of telling you, Sarah, this is not going to work. What are you doing?
Well, trouble is we were already doing it, you know?
And it was working.
It was working, yeah. We did four shows in 1996, kind of a test run, and we sold out like 15,000, 20,000 seat amphitheaters.
Let's hear a clip from the film. This is singer-songwriter Paula Cole.
And we realized, like, this is something that's much bigger than us or what we even thought it could be. There was magic in the air. And that was the first day of Lilith Fair.
Ali, going back to the late 90s to document what Lilith Fair meant to people, means to people, I mean, why was it important to revisit this moment in time now?
I think it's like the perfect moment, unfortunately. I think that period of pop culture like taught me how to look at myself and how to think about myself as a young woman and as a young gay person. It's just a blueprint for a better way to do things. Because there was a gap in the industry, there wasn't really a lot of safe spaces for women where they could go to a festival or consume live music.
Yeah.
And so it was... definitely filling a gap, saw a demand and filled it. And like, that's just good business.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost kind of an antithesis of the way I was raised too, which was, you know, don't go thinking you're anything special and you will fail. Why would you even try? And I'm like, aww. And it was all about proving my mother wrong.
So, you know, thanks, Mom.
Worked out.
There's a detail in this film that I didn't know about, and it was another really heartbreaking moment to watch as a woman, which is how the Grammys treated some of the Lilith Fair artists that swept the awards that night.
And the Grammy goes to Sean Colvin and John Libenthal.
Yet they have this diminishing experience at the Grammys.
But then Paula Cole, Sarah McLachlan, and I were asked to share the stage and do this medley instead of each of us being able to play our own songs.
And this is something that happens a lot in the Grammys. They like to do these mashups. But at the time, considering the massiveness of our success, it felt just like, once again, we were taking a step backwards and being lumped into this cool category of, oh, just women. The women are going to do a little medley. And yet, you know, R. Kelly and Hanson are, you know, get their own full track.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? You know, in some ways, we should have just said, we're not doing it. But they would have just gotten someone else to fill the slot. So we thought, okay, well, this is a minute and 30 seconds that we each get to play to, you know, the biggest audience we've probably ever had on national television. Mm-hmm. But we weren't that happy about it.
Yeah.
It felt a bit like punitive. It just felt like after every year of Lilith, it was like, we want to remind you, don't get too powerful. Don't get...
Yeah, don't think you're bigger than yourself. Don't get too excited. Yeah.
You oversaw 3 years in a row of this festival. Why'd you stop?
I stopped because I was utterly exhausted. I had given my whole world to Lilith for 3 years. So I really wanted to have a bit more of a normal life. I guess I could say it was selfish. But, you know, I feel like we did what we set out to do and did so much more than that.
Do you see anything, Sarah, in the music industry today that's changed for the better? Perhaps because of Lilith Fair?
I mean, I'm not going to say it's because of Lilith Fair, because there's many, many things that come into play. But I will say that we definitely changed, we forced the change of attitudes within the industry towards women and towards their commercial viability. I see artists like Taylor Swift in complete control of her career, reaching stratosphere heights and championing women alongside her. People like Brandi Carlile championing women, championing queer artists in ways that we never used to have.
I was thinking about Taylor Swift and Beyonce. Like, they literally move markets. Like, I think with Beyonce, all this cowboy attire just sold out. You can't even get it anywhere because of what she did.
Oh, they change a city's economy every time they come to their market.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's amazing.
Allie, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, I see young female artists advocating for themselves in a way that's like, no, I don't want to wear that. I don't want you to force me to wear what I don't want to wear. I want to work with the director I want to work with. I think that Lilith undeniably made the path easier for us to walk through every door.
We've been talking about the new documentary, Lilith Fair, Building a Mystery, that's now streaming on Hulu. My guests, director Allie Pankew, and the founder of Lilith Fair, Sarah McLachlan. And Sarah has a new album out, by the way. It's called Better Broken, and it's your first album, I think, in almost a decade, right? Your 10th album.
Yeah, 11 years, actually.
11 years. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
This is NPR News.
A federal judge has ruled that some of the Trump administration's firings of federal employees were not lawful.
It's very validating to see a legal order that really reflects the illegality of our experience.
But the chances of getting their jobs back are slimmer than ever. That story on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Former FBI Director James Comey has been indicted, charged with making a false statement to Congress during the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and obstruction of a criminal proceeding. Ryan Goodman is a former Pentagon counsel in the Obama administration.
I do think we have every reason to believe that Mr. Comey and Letitia James, if she were indicted, would bring a claim of vindictive or selective prosecution. That is a very hard case to ever make against the Justice Department. But there's ample evidence here, given the President of the United States has been calling for Mr. Comey to be criminally investigated or criminally indicted all the way back to 2017.
Speaking there on NPR's Morning Edition, Comey denies any wrongdoing. President Trump says he won't allow Israel to annex the occupied West Bank. Answering questions from reporters at the White House yesterday, Trump says he would block any such move.
I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. No, I will not allow it. It's not going to happen.
Did you speak with Netanyahu about this? Really?
Yeah, but I'm not going to allow it. Whether I spoke to him or not, I did. But I'm not allowing Israel to annex the West Bank.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is scheduled to visit Trump in Washington on Monday. This comes as Israel expands settlements in the West Bank and continues its offensive in Gaza. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The Union for Canada's Postal Service has declared an immediate nationwide strike. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it comes just hours after the federal government announced sweeping changes, including the closing of some post offices and the eventual end of door-to-door delivery.
The Canadian Union of Postal Workers says all of its members are walking off the job in response to Ottawa's attack on the Postal Service and its workers. Canada Post has been losing money, and Federal Procurement Minister Joel Lightbound says big changes are needed. He says the corporation is facing an existential crisis. Mail and parcel delivery have slowed. It is losing about $10 million a day, and repeated government bailouts are not the solution. Lightbound says 75% of Canadian households don't have door-to-door delivery now, and he adds that the moratorium on expanding the use of community mailboxes will soon end. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
British
National Public Radio's Morning Edition. You're hearing it here on KAXE. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer. Coming up, we'll have National Native News. We bring you news sources like local news. You can go to our website at kaxe.org. Good morning, John.
Morning, Heidi.
Dark morning.
Oh, it's getting dark.
But you got shorts on and a short sleeve t-shirt.
And flip-flops.
Oh, I didn't see the feet.
It's nice out. And if you have a big event coming up or you're just going to be chilling this weekend, the weekend looks amazing. Sunny today, 67 to 74, southeast winds 5 to 15. 40s to 50s tonight, Saturday, sunny with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s, breezy. Northwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, evening temps in the 40s, and then Sunday, sunny with highs in the mid to upper 70s. So it's absolutely beautiful out there.
Coming up next on National Native News, we are learning about a resource guide to help small and medium-sized governments in the Great Lakes region adapt to climate change, and that has been published. We'll learn more about what that report means to some tribal communities. Later this morning, we're talking to the folks at Minnesota Power. They'll be with us before 9 o'clock. We've got Carrie Ryan coming in, a civil engineer, and the chief operating officer, Josh Skelton. We're learning about their move to solar. They've recently had some community meetings, and will tell us more about what they've been hearing from the community. If you have questions, you can text us at 218-326-1234. Yesterday was interesting, John. On the Thursday morning show, I was on with Malachi, and he had gotten some feedback from friends that they were sort of nervous to text in to us. They didn't want to bother us. So we kind of played a game of like, okay, try it.
See if you can bother us.
And we got so many people writing in, and it was really fun to hear from them. I don't think people understand how much it means to us and keeps us going. If you're listening in and live interaction with you is just fantastic. And, you know, we might not read them all. Sometimes we do get a whole bunch of things coming in. But you can always say, don't use my name. I just want to make this comment. You know, feel free to do any of that kind of
stuff. It adds to the show. It's two-way radio. It's a community radio station. We'd love to hear from you. You're not bothering us, right?
That's right.
I want to thank Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative. So you tried some sort of technique and did it work Thursday with getting responses?
Yeah, we got tons of comments. Yeah, we were just talking about it. Yeah, because we also know there are people who have been playing Green Cheese for 40 years yet have never made a phone call. You know, they play it from home. And that might be just be the way you play the game on Saturday nights. But it might also be that, you know, you're just someone, I get that. I don't always, like in my home life, I don't always want to pick up the phone.
Right.
You know, and make a call, or you get a little, you overthink it, all of that kind of stuff.
But it is convenient. It's everybody's got something on them. So if something just turns your crank a little bit, let us know. I have some topics I'd like to talk about from a dinner party last night.
Okay. We are going to be talking sports coming up after 8 o'clock. We've got Kyle and Fred and John. Megan is away today. We'll preview tonight's two playoff games for the WNBA. Things are heating up. Hope you're able to see that. I've been having folks from out of town asking me, is there anywhere in Grand Rapids where I can go watch the Lynx? I think you can just ask.
Yeah.
Go somewhere and ask someone. And it's a big game tonight. So
it's so big.
8:30.
It's so big. Just go up to someone's house and knock on the door and say, do you mind if I watch the Lynx tonight?
Well, a lot of people don't have cable traditionally and don't have that. That's why they were asking me the questions.
Yeah. Were you able to watch it on your journey?
Oh, yeah. I've watched every game.
How about that second game?
It was terrible.
Oh, my gosh.
Again, I'm learning the gamut of emotions with sports. I was pretty confident in the second period, you know. Mm-hmm. They were on fire. I was like, we got this. You know, I was surprised because Alyssa Thomas is so fierce. Love mm-hmm. watching her play. Mm-hmm. She and Nafisha can go head-to-head. And then something happened. All the gas went out. All the wind out of that. And I think they got one basket in overtime.
That's basketball, man. It's just this highs and lows. And the Lynx have done that a few times this year, kind of blown some big leads. And
they
that's
keep
concerning.
Switching how they do that. Like, at first, it was they were not great in the beginning. And so that's why it felt so confident on Tuesday night. Yep. It was, you know, they've out of the gates. Mm-hmm. Boom. They're great. I think it was a 3 right away from Nafisha or something. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're like, all right, here we go. And so they sort of switched it up a little bit. But you know what? Sometimes that's what you need to get the spark going. This is a playoff out of 5.
And
then we go into 7 for the finals.
We're at Phoenix?
We're at Phoenix tonight at 8:30. The game before that will be, I did not get to see Tuesday night's game between the Las Vegas Aces and Indiana, and I heard it was a blowout.
Yeah.
I have my fingers crossed that somehow Indiana is going to come back, because I would like to see that game instead of the Lynx playing. I know I shouldn't think that far ahead, but Lynx playing the Aces is, I don't really want to see happen.
Phoenix is a good basketball team. They're very aggressive. Aggressive.
An almost completely new team, too.
Yeah.
There's not Holder. I mean, that's the legacy of Diana Taurasi, that team. Mm-hmm. She's gone. Alyssa Thomas is new there. Dawana Bond is new there. And it's a new coach. And so it's really very interesting. I do want to kind of talk about, you probably heard in the news, should save this for the sports page, but we can repeat it, about the kind of immediate letting go of Sandy, the coach of the New York Liberty, because they did not make the playoffs, even though they won the championship last year.
I know.
And were in the playoffs the year before.
So you wonder what that's about. You wonder if that's about players' response to her, or how do you let someone go after you won the championship?
And then how do you get another coach, mm-hmm. knowing that if you don't make the don't win the championship,
you're out of here.
Yeah. Only one team, if I'm not mistaken, only one team can win, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it's a game. So, you know, that's how that rolls. So not that I don't, for some reason, I've never loved that coach anyway.
Sandy. Well, we had a conversation last week on the sports page about the MVP coach. She's from Phoenix, right? The little tiny woman that's coach of Phoenix?
No, the team
the Lynx beat. Help me out. I'm losing it here. There's a young coach. Who did the Lynx play in the first round?
We're talking, the coach of the Valkyries one, the new expansion team.
She's nobody knew who she was, so we did some on-air research about who she was. She coached over in many different countries. Yeah. And
She had an amazing year. That was, who would have thought, you know, that.
Yeah.
Golden especially, State. I mean, of course, Paige Becker's had a good season, but she was on a tough team, you know, Dallas Wings. But who would have thought that an expansion team would have made it to the playoffs, but not Paige Becker's team, you know? Yeah. I know it's not only her team. She can only do so much.
Well,
you know?
if the Valkyries don't perform next year, they'll probably fire her. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Coach Reeve of the Minnesota Lynx had a lot to say about that, about all the coaching. But she said, you know what? There's a great opportunity there for some great coaches now. And she said Sandy's going to land on her feet. She's done a lot of different kinds of coaching in various. She's done college basketball, and this is maybe the third league in the WNBA that she has coach. So
remember the Indiana Fever coach was canned too a year ago, and now she's done great. She coached for somebody else.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name, but anyway, that's just the business. That's just how it goes. That goes in professional football. Some coaches get canned and they go somewhere else and they get a new look, and they, you know, it's just it's the way the circuit goes in professional sports. But the Lynx play tonight, right?
8:30 tonight. Yep. Support for programming today comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. They're home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A resource guide to help small and medium-sized governments in the Great Lakes region adapt to climate change has been published. Chuck Kornbach reports that some tribal communities in the area are already trying to reduce problems caused by higher temperatures and additional flooding.
The guide is from the International Joint Commission, or IJC, which helps implement the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909 between the U.S. and Canada. Liz Kirkwood of the IJC's Water Quality Board says climate change has brought more severe storms, loss of ice cover, and extreme temperatures to much of North America, including the Great Lakes region.
In 2024, extreme weather disasters cost the 8 Great Lakes states more than $13 billion U.S. dollars combined. Some of the costliest disasters happened in the last 5 years.
While debate continues over how to reduce air pollution that contributes to climate change, the IJC has published a guide aimed at helping small and medium-sized governments adapt to the new temperatures and heavier rainfalls. Charlie Rasmussen of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission says his organization welcomes the sharing of best practices, funding ideas, and other strategies. He says the commission's 11 Ojibwe member tribes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota are already taking steps, sometimes in collaboration with local, state, or federal agencies. One project being Ishkade. That's using prescribed or controlled fires on land next to water.
They help maintain and reestablish native species that do the best job at holding the soil and able to resist, you know, some of these severe precipitation events.
Rasmussen says other tribes are putting in larger roadside culverts to reduce highway damage from flooding and to help wildlife move. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
This academic year in North Dakota, eighth graders are getting new textbooks that'll educate them about the five tribes that are found within the state. As Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports, this is a series that's being revised for the first time in 30 years.
Originally, four texts and a journal were printed between 1995 and 2002. Much of the content came from interviews with tribal elders in the 1970s. This new series will still feature books on the Spirit Lake Oyate, Standing Rock Oyate, Turtle Mountain Ojibwe, and the three affiliated tribes or Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation, or MHA. But a new edition on the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate has been added, and each tribe had exclusive editorial control over their respective book, which included more recent historical information.
It's so important that Indigenous peoples are represented in a contemporary sense.
Sashay Shetler is an MHA citizen and the assistant director of North Dakota's Office of Indigenous and Multicultural Education. She recalls classmates growing up who thought Native people were extinct.
And then you have people getting elected into positions, and if you have somebody thinking that Indigenous peoples don't exist, they're going to make policies that aren't bettering our communities for everyone.
5% of North Dakota's population is Native American. Nick Asbury is a former employee of the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction who has remained active in promoting the books.
It's important that we have the platform for the nations to tell their own story because kids are smart. They know when something is authentic and when it's not.
An original overview entitled Journey to Understanding, An Introduction to North Dakota Tribes, is still part of the set. Besides eighth graders, people can download the set for free or order a published copy online. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanek Broadcast Corporation with funding in part from the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. No longer, of course, or I guess they haven't shut their doors yet. At the end of September, CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is no longer. We'll continue to get updates, of course, though, as they figure out, as we have at KEXC, the funding models going forward. We're in some national trainings. I was just in a meeting yesterday with folks from Kohanic Broadcasting, where they're out of Alaska and Arizona, and they're doing some great work. They were talking about what they're working on, which is an app for the work that they do, including National Native News, and they have a program called Native American Calling, a live call-in program every day. If you are interested and you appreciate what you hear on KEXC, Kohanic Broadcasting is a great place to go to find out more about what's going on throughout the entire country when it comes to tribal nations.
Absolutely.
We're asking for folks this week, it's question of the week, what's your favorite place to look at fall colors?
And how, they're not peak yet. You were up the North Shore. And
yeah.
You would think that it'd be more powerful there, but it was pretty.
Yeah, it was last week. So there was some, but it wasn't real strong, but it was wall-to-wall people. And maybe not that bad. We went midweek, so you kind of think, there won't be as many people and, you know, all of that. But it's wonderful. It's such an easy way to see some beautiful landscape of just, Minnesota's so blessed with the state park system we have. You can just drive up Highway 61, stop at every park and take a trail and go see beautiful things. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of planning, doesn't take any of that. So that's what we kind of did, even though I've done it many times in my life. We once again went to Split Rock Lighthouse. Great. Great stuff. And I don't know if you've been to Teteguch State Park's Visitor Center. I mean, it's like you're at Yellowstone National Park.
What?
It is
really
amazing. Their visitor center. And yeah, it's just really, really cool. And then we got to go to Grand Portage and the state park where you climb up to the Great Falls and you can see Canada. You're right there on the edge.
Did you see any wildlife? Beautiful. Like any moose or anything?
We saw a bear
okay.
at one point, but no moose. We saw we were shocked at Grand Portage at the visitor center there. They had a moose, a real moose stuffed, you know, whatever, a taxidermy. How big it is. It's like three of me, height-wise.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I knew they were big, right? And I've seen them in the wild in Alaska, but you know, it's a different thing to stand. I've never
up close and personal. Yeah, for sure.
So yeah. And thanks. I just, you know, there's lots of folks who work at these state parks, at these national parks, at these places, and they are all so informative and pleasant to deal with. And, you know, all us tourists walking around saying, how long is that trail? Is it a hard trail? And are there, you know, like all these things that you hear people say.
Which one do you suggest?
Yeah. I think, you know, it was a little heartbreaking because I've done that, you know, I've done those parks for, I'm trying to think what my age is, 30 years, three, mm-hmm. something like that. Started going in college with my best friend and, you know, kind of the thing you do. You go on the trails, but you also jump from rock to rock and you climb out and it's, you know, you feel kind of adventurous, even though it's not a big deal. Yeah, not at my age anymore.
Not anymore.
I think I am going to be the old lady who knows when it's going to rain because of my knee.
Oh.
You see me limping around now. I am still not quite 100% and a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm sure your dad or your mom was able to predict the forecast when they were at that age.
Yeah.
It only gets better, Heidi. It only gets better.
Thanks.
Just embrace
good,
it.
Good to hear. All right. So it is a beautiful morning. We're going to get to our talkback segment. We've got Malachi Coons and the set list. But right now, current temperatures, 42 with some fog in Hibbing, 39 in Bemidji this morning, and fair skies. Brainerd at 48. Grand Rapids at 44, Park Rapids at 42, Embarrass 37 this morning, Ely 37. This week on the Tuesday morning show, we talked more about the first frost and the first hard frost and the differences between that. And you'll learn more about it through the Season Watch newsletter, which you can sign up for at kaxe.org. And I don't think I'm supposed to say it out loud, but next month we begin a brand new podcast, a Season Watch podcast. That you can
season get watch podcast.
Once a week, and it's going to give you lots of great. It's fun. It's going to be informative. You're going to find out about what's happening in the world and hear people's stories when it comes to nature.
So, Season Watch podcast. Have you gotten the Beatles? Have the Beatles showed up at your house? Not Paul and John, but those little invasive beetles.
Oh,
oh my gosh! They just came out one day, and they're just crazy now. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. The lady.
Trying to get into your house, and you got to get the vacuum and vacuum the ceiling, and they stink.
Yeah, they really, really smell.
Time for the talkback segment of the morning show. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at comments@kaxe.org or text us. It's real easy, 218-326-1234.
KAXE was recently named the Ampers Station of the Year. Mm. We shared the news on Facebook and received 47 comments offering congratulations. Teak from Minneapolis said they should just call that the KAXE Award and give it to stations that try to be as good.
Nice.
Teak, thank you.
The plaque is prominently displayed here. Pete from Nisswa made an online donation this week and commented, "Stay tough, KAXE. Phonology and local music are my faves."
We continue to be overwhelmed and so thrilled by your support. People continue to pledge each and every day as, of course, you've heard the news. It's sort of old news now, but a daily struggle of losing all federal financial support that we've had for the last almost 50 years. And so is public media around the country. You can always donate to us. All you need to do is text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Yesterday, really interesting conversation with a new Greater Minnesota reporter from MinnPost, Brian Arala, and he had done this intensive story about rural grocery stores and food deserts and visited stores in northwestern Minnesota like Grigla and also in Cook, and talked about, you know, how hard it is to keep a local grocery store going, but what a hub of community grocery stores are. Brian emailed us afterwards. He said, "Thank you so much for having me on. I'm new to the format, and the conversation of Phil helped quell the nerve. I enjoyed the broadcast all morning, from coffee talk to the real-time texts from listeners."
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Brian. And that conversation, his full story is shared on our website, but we'll give you the conversation we had with him later today at KAXE.org.
Yesterday morning, we talked about the coffee, and Betty from Nevis said, "Life without coffee is like a day without sunshine. One could say that about KAXE as well. If I was rich, I'd give you lots of money. You do great work and are always the way I start my day." Thank you so much, Betty. And also, we got this little letter. It says, "Please use this donation to continue the fine work of KAXE, KBXE. We appreciate your quality work on behalf of the residents of northern Minnesota." And that's from Kathy and Stephen.
Our board of directors met earlier this week, and here's their report.
This is Bianca Karjalainen with the Northern Community Radio Board of Directors Report. The board held their monthly meeting on September 22nd, 2025 at the KAXE studio in Grand Rapids and online via Zoom. The board president, Jennifer Gorman, called the meeting to order at 6:02 p.m. The minutes from the August 25th meeting, as well as the September agenda, were approved by all in attendance. KAXC CEO Sarah Bignall provided the board with a business report and general update. Grants and funding opportunities are in the works in light of the CPP closing at the end of September. Sarah provided a review of the August financials and gave an early preview that September financials are also looking good, so we anticipate ending the year in a good place. Riverfest was a great time, including the double rainbow. Lots of great feedback was shared with the staff. The board reviewed updates to the FY 2026 budget, and the changes were made within the budget in light of the reduction in CPP funding. A motion to approve the financials was made and approved unanimously. Feedback was shared regarding the board raffle during Riverfest, including how the winner decided to give back to our local community and join the station as a member. New board fundraising opportunities were discussed. The meeting was adjourned at 7:21 p.m. The next meeting of the board of directors will be held at the KBXC studios in Bemidji on October 27th at 6 p.m. This concludes the on-air report. As always, thank you for listening.
Younger, I used to seek pleasure. When I was younger, I used to drink wine. Now that I'm older, I'm rocking a cradle, rocking a baby who's always crying. Younger, I used to dress fancy. When I was younger, I used to dress fine. Now that I'm older, there's no time for dancing, no time for wasting on women and wine.
That was Bonnie Light Horseman, John. You just
good voice.
Me. And it was in that great song. That's Anais Mitchell, Eric D. Johnson from the Fruit Bats, and Josh Kaufman. This is their second album together, one of those kind of super groups. And Yeah, that's one I really, really enjoyed. That's the song's called When I Was Younger. That was sort of what I was feeling.
And when you were younger, you used to be able to jump off rocks, Heidi.
Mm-hmm. I didn't. The thing was that was really disconcerting was that I didn't fall.
Yeah.
I jumped wrong. You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's like,
I do know what
you're like,
mean.
Oh, you're not really doing anything. And ow, that hurt.